Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim is daf Gimel, and we are holding at the bottom of daf Beis Amud Beis, and what appears to be tangential issues of exactly how it is that we use the word or, because for some reason we went out of our way, which is really strange, to use an ambivalent kind of language over here. So we had this machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, or we thought we had a machlokas anyway, between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda as to what the word or means. Now, our first take on this was that the difference between them was an actual difference in how to understand the Mishnah. Did it mean that we're supposed to do the Bedikas Chometz at night, or did it mean that we're supposed to do the Bedikas Chometz at daybreak? So we still would use a candle because maybe it was still a little dark. It was just around right after the dawn. Whatever, that's what we thought. We started bringing rayas that it's actually possible to bring cases where it definitely would mean Lila, and therefore didn't understand why Rav Huna is insisting that it means Yom. So again, here's the evolution of our thinking. We initially thought that he meant seriously that this is what it means in all contexts. Then we understood, no, it doesn't mean that. Of course, it's clear that it certainly can mean Lila, but nonetheless, we thought that Rav Huna was saying that the assumptive meaning, until you can prove otherwise, is always or. And then we started attacking him from many, many different proofs, not because one is better than the other, but because by sheer weight of instances where we use the word or to mean Lila, we erode Rav Huna's opinion. Because how could he say we have a presumptive basis to say that or means day? I understand if I only had one place where it was used euphemistically, two, three places, and I keep bringing you rayas. So then we're going to have to finally come around to understand that, no, obviously that isn't what Rav Huna meant. So we're still in the middle right now of bringing all of these rayas one way or the other. What exactly does or mean? So we got up to Meitve, Ein Masi'in Masu'ot, which is four lines up from the bottom on Amud Beit. So Meitve, Ein Masi'in Masu'ot El Al HaChodesh Shinir El Bizmano Lekatsho. Now, these Masu'ot, as everyone knows from Lord of the Ring, from the Mishnah, these Masu'ot were the fires that were lit on the top of mountains to be able to have rapid communication, to jump basically 40 miles at a time. And by lighting each, there were people that were waiting on top of mountains, see the fire, they would light, and in no time at all, the news of the Kiddush HaChodesh would spread from mountain to mountain till it got all the way from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and that way they would know precisely what the day of Rosh Chodesh was. Now, how exactly did they communicate? Did they light it on the day of Rosh Chodesh, or what? Well, says the Mishnah over here, that no, actually, the Masu'ot B'davka were written only Al HaChodesh Shenir The Chodesh Shenira Bizmano Lekatsho was not the time. In other words, it was not an announcement that Rosh Chodesh has been Chal now as we do it, which would have mean that would have meant that we would have to do it somehow at the time of the Rosh Chodesh. But on the contrary, Ela Lechodesh Shenira Bizmano Lekatsho. Obviously, there would be no way for us to announce it if the whole idea was that we're waiting for the Edim to come by even at the very last minute. So therefore, what we did was on the 30th day, that was the day that was Roy either to be a Chodesh Me'ubar, or it would be Rosh Chodesh. If it was a Chodesh Me'ubar, then the 31st day would be automatically would be the Rosh Chodesh, because we did not get Edim in time to make this day Rosh Chodesh, and therefore, Min HaShamayim, the next day was Rosh Chodesh. So therefore, the Tana wants us to understand that if the month automatically, so to speak, became a month that was an extra day month, so then we don't tell you anything, but because that's something that happens automatically. So we will not let you know that there were any kind of changes. So when nobody sees any indication that there were changes, then they understand this. Apparently, yesterday wasn't Rosh Chodesh. Yesterday was the 30th day of the previous month. But when do we let you know? When it was a Chodesh that we actually had made Rosh Chodesh at the time, and then when do we let you know? We can't let you know the night that we made it, Rosh Chodesh, so when do we let you know? We let you know Lo'or Iburo, which means the night after the day of the 30th day. So now we want you to know that we had actually had the opportunity. Maybe it was only 5 minutes before the end of the day. In the end, of course, we made a takona not to take Edom that late. But Lamaisa, the point is that we let you know afterwards. Why do we call the night of the 31st day? Because that is the day that would be the day that the Chodesh would be Me'ubar on if we hadn't made it Rosh Chodesh yesterday. So we call that day the Or Iburo. That would have made the extra day for the Chodesh before. But anyway, what it says over here is Or Iburo. Now, obviously, we did not light these bonfires in the daytime because they wouldn't have done much good, would they? So the whole point is that Or clearly must mean over here Lila, and therefore it's very difficult to understand how anybody could argue with that. Alma Or Urtahu. Shmamina. Yes, indeed we do. Another proof, Medve. Haya omeid kolalailo makriv ala mizbeach le'orah ta'un kirishadayim v'raglayim divrei Rebbe. So here you've got a Kohen who's been working all night. He's been bringing the Emurim, or the Basar of the Eila, which hadn't had a chance to be brought during the day. He continues to bring them all night long, and now, all of a sudden, it's dawn. What does he do? Le'orah, he needs to do Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Again, this is a question about whether Lina is Mo'elet le'Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Normally, things that have been overnight, they expire, so they become useless. Al gabav shel mizbeach, that doesn't happen, of course, to the Yevorim and so on, but it does happen to the Yadayim Raglayim of the Kohen, and therefore he has to start the day again. But anyway, it does say over here, le'orah, so le'orah, therefore, must mean over here, definitely in the daytime. What else could it mean? It says, kol ha'layla le'orah. That's a riot to Ravuna. Says Rabbi Yehuda, that doesn't mean anything. Orah is not the same thing as or. So orah, actually, of course I agree that in that case, even Rabbi Yehuda would say, of course I agree, in that case, it means the daytime. Meitvei Mar Zutra. So we've got another fascinating raya. So let's first get our background straight, even though we've had this many, many times. So remember that the halacha is that a woman who gives birth requires korbanot in order at the end to be able to eat kachim and to be nichlas into the Beis HaMikdash. The seder of the giving birth is that for, it's a 40-day versus an 80-day male-female, respectively, cycle, which for the male consists of 7 days of Tumas Leda, 33 days of what's known as Dam Tohar, and then at the end of those 40 days, then she's considered to be in a position, because she was called a Tfulas Yom Aroch during that entire time. It's as if the sun never set. The next morning, on the 41st day, she's able to go ahead and bring her korban, and at that point she's a mechuseret kippurim until she brings the korban. For a female, it's 14 days of Tumas Leda, followed by 66 days of Dam Tohar, and then on the 81st day in the morning, she's able to already bring her korbanos, and until then, until the nighttime expired, she was called a Tfulas Yom Aroch. From that time, she's a Mechuseret Kippurim, and so on. Now, the problem is that we have a riboy in the Torah that says, Zot Torah Tayoledet, from which we learn that it is possible to subsume various births within the same korban. But that means only if you weren't already chayevet to bring that korban before the second birth. Now, when it comes to a male birth, this could never happen because it takes 40 days to become pregnant enough to have a viable, when we say viable, I mean a human embryo at that point that's called nefesh, which is mechayev in the case of a miscarriage, is mechayev a korban. But assuming she first had a female, and then she's got a long time to get pregnant because she's got 66 days. She could have gotten pregnant. She could have had a 40-day gestation, which then terminated in a miscarriage. So in that case, The halacha is that if, in fact, she has this miscarriage in the middle of her Yemei Tohar, that's exactly what it was that the Torah was referring to when it said Zot Torata Yoledet. So she can bring one carbon for multiple births. And the question is, the moment that she already was mechuyevet in the carbon for that first birth, so let's say the baby is born on the 81st day from the original birth, then there's no question she definitely will need to bring two separate carbonas. Now, the only problem is, what happens if she has this miscarriage on the night before the 81st day? So in this case, the Tfilas Yom period is complete. If she bleeds at that time, she's like any other woman who is Roya Dam, and, you know, would be defined by the complex set of circumstances we had. And normally she would just be Anita. And the idea over there is that there's no difference whatsoever between the night of the 81st day, the morning of the 81st day. However, there is one complicating factor, and that is when it comes to defining the chiv of the carbon, that you cannot bring a carbon during the night. So, I mean, is there any meaning to say, well, she already was supposed to be bringing her carbon for the first birth, and therefore we cannot subsume the second birth? And she wasn't. Because until that morning, she really could not have even dreamt of bringing that carbon. It's only biyom tzavoto. There we have a machlokas bet Shammai and bet Hillel, whether the theoretical possibility, the fact that she's no longer part of the first birth cycle, she's post Yemei Tohar, whether that itself is considered to be the chiyuv of the carbon, because of which she'd have to bring a separate carbon, which is Beit Hillel's opinion, or whether we say she still has not gone into a period in which she could have brought that carbon, and therefore she is still able to subsume the birth in the first carbon, which is Beit Shammai's opinion. This gets into very complex inyanim in Masechet Kritut about whether we would say that there's such a thing as Laila being called Mechusar Zman, not Mechusar Zman, which you may recall, but this is beyond our needs to work out right now. What's important for us here, of course, is the language. It's all a function of language. So what it says over here is that if the miscarriage occurs, note the words, or lishwonim ve'echad. So that means, as we're going to see, it's clearly talking about the night before, and it's using the word or. Beit Shammai says she does not have to bring a second korban. Beit Hillel says she certainly does. Marlam, then here's where we see clearly it means the night. Amrulam, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, we don't understand you guys. Maishna or shmonim vechad, mi yom shmonim vechad. Note the contrast. What's the difference between the or, obviously meaning what's the difference between the night and the day, right? The night before and the day. Aren't they the same? And not only that, but im shivalo latu, I mean, you agree that if she was Roya Dam that night, that certainly that Dam is Dam Nidais, it's not Dam Tohar. So why, if it has the din of being normal Dam when it comes to the nighttime, the Gabi Tuma, why wouldn't it have the birth be the same? Lo yishvalo lekorban, won't it be the same? Now, it's irrelevant to us, the continuation of the conversation over here. What's important to us is the language. If Beit Hillel insists on saying, what's the difference between the or and the yom? So obviously, Shema Mino, or means the night. Oh, man, Shema Mino. I mean, this is, there's nothing to argue about. Okay. So there's no question that, of course, even according to Rav Huna, it definitely can mean the night. He's not going to argue on the Mishnah here. And what we want to show is that this, as I mentioned earlier in the introduction, we want to show that this is common. So, Meitvei, what about this braita? Again, I mean, it's just another raya. It doesn't add anything new. Yochol ye'ne'echal or lishlishi. So remember that, let's take a look at a korban todah. So a korban todah is only allowed to be eaten for the day that you bring it and the following night. Mashenken korban shlomim can be eaten for 2 days and the night in between those 2 days. So it's eaten for the remainder of the day that you brought it, plus the night, and then the next day. So the question is, can it also be eaten on the night following the second day? And that is called here in the Braita, or lishlishi, the evening before, the night before the third day. That's how we refer to it. So we said in the Braita over there, you might think that it should indeed be eaten, or lishlishi, and it's very reasonable to say that. V'dinu. If we have some type of zvachim, let's take the korban todah, that are eaten for 1 day, And other things, like the Korban Shlamim, are eaten for 2 days. So just like in the case of the one-day Todah, it's eaten for the day and the following night, which means that when it comes to Kachim, we look at the night of the next day as actually the night following the first day. So if that's the case, just like the Laila follows Yom, so here too, when it comes to the Shlamim, we should say that the next night is part of the second day and is not considered to be a different day. And the Laila follows the day, right? No. To make certain that you don't make that mistake, the Torah goes out of its way to say, "B'yom zivchachem ye'achel umimochorat, v'hanotar ad yom." Why does it have to say v'hanotar ad yom? Because ad yom is meant to be understood as v'hanotar ad yom. That the idea is whatever is left so long as the day continues. That's the meaning of ba'od yom, as long as the day is still there, unecha. But he is not eaten lo'or shlishi. Fine. Now, it's clear, obviously, that all of this is or as the night before, right? Yocho, he continues the brisa, once we already are doing it, let's get the whole thing. You might think, therefore, so let me start burning it immediately in the night, because, and that too is very logical, because we have the other case of the Todah, it's eaten, or the Korban Pesach, it's eaten for the day and the following night, and we burn it the next morning. And Shlamim are eaten for 2 days in the interim night. So is it not true that in the case of the one day achila, followed by a night, that as soon as the time of eating is over, it's time for burning the noser? True? So why don't we say the same thing over here? As soon as the time for eating is over, which we've now proven that that means the nighttime is the end of, I can't eat it at the end of the, post the end of the second day. So then I should immediately start burning it at night. And I should say, tekef lachila sreifa year two. Therefore, the Torah says, v'anotar mipsar hazevach bayom hashelishi be'esh yisareif. Meaning on the third day, bayom atasoreif yatasorfo balayla. So by stressing yom, it's telling us yom and only yom, which is a different din. We don't burn kachim at night. So it's irrelevant to whether it has a status of notar. It's not the time for burning notar. And therefore, forget about the implications. Nothing to do with the sugya, but I just want you to look at the words, said the Gemara. Did the Braisa say, you might have thought that yehi nechal or lashlishi, kamash malan, no. So, I mean, obviously, or means urta. Yeah, you're right, you're right. Okay, I'll show you another case. I mean, to say, as Rav Huna appears to hold, that we normally assume that or means the day. I mean, look how many times we don't make that assumption. Toshma. Or shel yom ha-kippurim, mitpalel sheva u-mitvada. Shachrit, mitpalel sheva u-mitvada. Musav, mitpalel sheva u-mitvada. Mincha, mitpalel sheva u-mitvada. So far we see clearly that the language of or meant ma'ariv time, meant the night before, right? We're supposed to say the seven brachas of what Art Scroll insists of calling Shmona Esrei for Rosh Hashanah. Good heavens. Anyway, one of my pet peeves, I guess. It's the most insane thing ever to have such a complete nituk from the meaning of words. God help us. But anyway, so we do our seven bracha Amidah, and we say Vidui. And every one of these occasions, or Shachris, Musav, Mincha. When it comes to Ma'ariv, then we have a Machlokas again. This is not really important to us right now. But Ba'arvit, so then you do not say the full seven, the full 18, because it's already Ma'ariv, of course, post Kedusha Shmona of Yom Kippur. So you say 18 brachas, but you don't have to say the whole 18 brachas. Basically, you're allowed to pray Havinenu, which is the short form, and it's called Me'ein Shmona Esrei. Just like the Me'ein Shalosh of Al-Hamichra is called Me'ein, the three brachas of the Birkat HaMazon. So we call Havinenu the Me'ein Shmona Esrei brachot. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shuma Votav, you can't do that because you need to say the Chonen Hadad. In Chonen Hadad, you need to say Havdalah. And there's no place in Havinenu that you can do that. There the Gemara explains why. But anyway, since you need to say Havdalah b'Chonen Hadad, you say the full Shmona Esrei. Okay, forget the points. Just look at the language. Does it say or Shachris Musaf? Yes. Okay, so what does or mean? Obviously, night. Yes? Yes. Shema Amina, fine. All right. So if you are still insisting, Ravuna, as we think that in this particular case, or actually means the morning, even though for some reason we've shown you it certainly can mean the night, but I don't know, maybe you've got some information that you're not telling us as to why we would presume that in this case, or means the daytime, I'm going to show you that that is absolutely not true. Toshma, here's a braita, the Tani Devei Shmuel, Lele Arba'asar Bodkina Tachametz Lo'or Haner. Okay, you can't get clearer than that. The time of Bedikas Chametz is in the night. So what's with you insisting that or means daytime? Ama or Urtu in our Mishnah. So now we've shown in general, you've agreed it's certainly possible. Then you've agreed, okay, it's even normal. Now we've shown you it's in the Mishnah. So what the heck are you saying? So obviously, we totally misunderstood Ravuna. Ravuna never meant to say that or meant the morning over here. Of course, Ben Ravuna, Ben Rav Yehuda, there's no question about the meaning in the Mishnah. The meaning in the Mishnah is the night before the 14th day is the time that we do the Bedika. To Kuleyama or Urtuhu at night. There's no argument out here at all about anything, actually. So what is all of this? Language. It's only about language. How would I want to refer to the nighttime if I want to tell you, see you at night? That's the difference. Actually, Ravuna and Rav Yehuda lived in different locations. And in the location of Ravuna, the way to say night was nige. So marki atre, umarki atre. Ba'atre de Ravuna koru nige. They called night light. So what we did, look, here's what we did. This reminds me, my father's atzal tells me that he remembers walking into the cheder when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and the Rebbe is teaching the children in Yiddish, of course, how to read this week's parsha. Right, perfect position. So it says, Vihine sulam mutzav arza, right? So the Rebbe is saying, Vihine sulam tzigeven aletel, asks one of the kids, Rebbe, maze letel? Ah, letel? Sulam. So basically, that's exactly what's going on over here. Ravuna, he said nige. And we heard the word nige in Yiddish, basically. So nige means in the morning. But the word nige doesn't mean in the morning. The word nige is just a translation of the word or. Or means light. So you say, what does or mean? And Ravuna would have said, it means light. Would you have thought he meant to meant the night before? No. But in Aramaic, everybody says nige. So in his place, the way to say when is or arba asar, well, obviously, it's nige, which means the night before, which basically simply repeated the strange use of the word or for night that was in the Mishnah. And of course, that's the whole point that the Gemara ultimately wants to make. And that is that we are coming to something that has to do with the nature of language and how it is that we want to use language and how to relate to the world. Now, this is not obviously only incidentally related to Pesach. It's the essence of Pesach because there's nothing that is more central to Pesach than language, correct? The Sfat lo yadati yashma, asiroti misevel shikma, the entire idea of getting out of Mitzrayim had to do with piachirot, a mouth of freedom, a way in which you're able to say a Haggadah and to be misaper yitzias Mitzrayim and to recognize the implications of the choice of words that are used on, again, the consciousness of your space. And this is we talked about as part of the etzem idea of the Bedikas Chometz. It has to do with the nature of your awareness of the space of Pesach. Because of that, the very first word that the Mishnah uses here is a word that forces Tanoim into the same argument and shows us that, Amoraim, and shows us that they are also being careful about the utilization of words for night and day, same way the Mishnah was. So why didn't the Tana just make things clear and say, Lele Arba Asar, the way that Shmuel made it clear with the Braisa, right? That's because Lishnama al Yehuda Naka. There is such a thing as a difference in how you use your language. There is coarser language and there is refined language. Part of the nature of freedom is the extent at which your language is able to raise you above the grunts of the gorilla that you were and turn you into a human being. And therefore, it relates very much to the other word for a word, Mila. Mila and Pesach, language, Pesach. So this is, as the Remez always is, the Pesach, the speaking mouth, is central to an understanding of the difference between the animal and the human. So it's no better place for us to learn about that difference than right over here. And therefore, the Tana wants us to be confused, and Ravuna Rav Yehuda continue the confusion very advisedly, so we could have this entire daf to discuss why in the world they would use that language. And the reason that he didn't do this is to teach us what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said. The Omar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, lo'olam al yotzi adam davar migune mipiv. Don't speak in a coarse way if you have an option, as we'll see it means. It doesn't mean don't use coarse language, because the Gemara always uses very coarse language. But it means don't use coarse language when you have the option of using a more refined language, which conveys the same idea. And how do we know that? Now, again, as Rashi points out, there's nothing obscene, obviously, about talking about night. And it's not that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi was referring to this particular case. Our Tana wanted to teach us the difference between saying or and lil, and therefore we learned from it an extension of the overall halacha of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, who spoke about Dovra Meguneh. But that doesn't mean that we're calling this a Dovra Meguneh, obviously. But he said, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, that if you take a look at the Torah, you will see that the Torah, which usually is extremely makpid at using only the shortest possible, as we'll see later on, the shortest possible way to convey information. And we've seen this in terms of our analysis of the information density of the drushes. And the reason for that information density is another element of language, as we'll see soon. But what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, look at this strange fact that the Torah was willing to add 8 unnecessary letters simply in order to say things in a way that didn't touch upon coarseness. Sheneemar, mina beima ha-tehora, umina beima asher einena tehora. Now that is weird. Noach is told, instead of simply saying, take a beima tmeya and take a beima tehora, he's told, take the beima tehora and then take the beima which is not tehora. That's an awful lot of extra letters, isn't it? Now, you need to say any of that because you could have simply say, which is 5 letters, and instead you replace it with Asher Einena Torah, which now is 13 letters. So that means you've got 8 extra letters. And why? Must be to teach us this din. Rav Papa says, no, wait, what do you mean 8 extra letters? I can bring you a place where it says 9 letters, okay? Shenemar ki yebecha ish Asher lo yihye tohar mikre laila. I mean, isn't it a lot easier to say, Asher yet tameh mikra laila? Asher lo yet tahor? So then that's basically now adding 9 letters that are unnecessary, because you could have simply said tameh, which is 3 letters long, and instead you write Asher lo yet tahor, which is 12 letters. So how do you explain that? Ravina says, wait a minute, what do you mean 9 letters? It's 10 letters. Because the Torah writes over here, Tahor, with a Vav, right? I mean, Rav Papa was saying, look, I mean, even if you want to say we could do it Chaser, but Rav Acha says, what do you mean we could? Ravina says, what do you mean we could? But we don't. There's an extra Vav in Tahor, so it means that the Torah adds 10 special letters in order to teach us this halacha. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, what do you mean? I'll bring you a case where we've got 16 extra letters, okay? And this is the story of Yonatan's coming in to protect David, and Shaul, it says over there, so Shaul didn't ask the first day, where is David? Ki Amar, he said to himself, Mikrehu, now could have said, Mikre Tamehu, right? That's all. Instead, the Pusik talks about this whole thing. It must have been Mikre Bilti Tahorhu, and he didn't have a chance to go to the mikveh, Kilo Tahor. I mean, what in the world is all of that? It must be because we're trying to teach us to avoid that word instead of Mikre Tamehu, to say Mikre Tahorhu Kilo Tahor, which is 16 additional letters. Unbelievable. Tanya, Devei Rabbi Yishmael, take a look at even implications. Forget about whether there's something coarse about the language per se. How about if the image that is generated by the language is more coarse than an image that's generated by other language? So now we have the question of Tuma of Azov or Azova. We're over there. Remember that we have from our learning in Kalim, we have a concept of Moshav, and we have a concept of Merkav. Now, on the surface, we'll talk about this in a sec, on the surface, these two tumas are the same. And nonetheless, surprisingly, when the Torah describes a male tome, a zov, so it says beferish in the Torah, the lotion of Merkav. Okay? So Merkav asher yikav alav hazav. For some reason, when it comes to a woman who has exactly the same tumas, it doesn't use that language. Instead, it says, Amoshav asher teshev. Now, why would that be? Must be because the word merkav, which means riding, immediately conjures up an image of a woman whose legs are split, one on one side of the animal she's riding and one on the other side. Now, the suggestion of a woman who has spread her legs is obviously coarse. So we don't even want to use the Lashon of Merkav, which is amazing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the word riding, but the word itself is viewed as not being Nikiya because of what it implies. That's how incredibly careful the Torah was. Now, again, as I mentioned to you a moment ago, there's something weird about this because, as Tosis points out, Merkav and Moshav are not the same. They're the same mostly, but there's a big difference because someone who is Nogea on the Merkav that the Zov was Rochev Alav does not have a din of being Metame the Begonim that are on him. And he's not Chayiv in Kivas Begonim. Remember, that was like one of the big surprise issues in Kalim that we had. So Tosafos asks, so how in the world, I mean, the Torah's got no choice. There's two totally different dinim. You can't possibly say that it's the same tumah that is being called Moshav by the Yishanat Merkav. That's absolutely not true la'alacha. Therefore, Tainus Tosafos, now what we're talking about over here, it means that the Loshan, there is, the meaning is that be'ishakar o Moshav, because it uses a riboy in the Pasuk that talks about Moshav, to call our attention to the fact that says, Asher hi yoshevet alav, Kli Asher yoshevet alav is to add the word Merkav. So by adding a word through Moshav to teach me Merkav, it's basically changing our relationship to the image. That's what it means. But the idea is essentially the same between Rashi and Tosfos. All right, so it must be. That's the reason. There's two other psukim that make this clear. It furthermore says, we're going to ask why we need furthermore. Va'omer, furthermore, it says beferish in Eov that, you know, this is where Eliphaz is telling Eov, you know, you don't know how to speak properly. Look at the way you're talking, and you should be more careful. And he said to him, Vatifchar Lashon Arumim. So this means you have to choose always. Arumim means very, very clever and careful and wise. So you have to choose that kind of language. Vatifchar is Lashon Tzivoy. See to it that you choose that kind of language. And then the Pasuk also says that Da'at Tzvatai Borur Milelu, that my Das is expressed specifically in things that are very clear as opposed to the way you're talking. Okay, so then if that's the case, there's also specific tzivuyim to make sure that you do this. But why do we need these two extra psukim? I don't get it. I mean, wasn't it a beautiful, beautiful diuk from the Moshav and Merkav thing? This seems to be completely extra and just sort of, you know, it makes it less powerful to me. I mean, this is like an incredible example. I'll tell you why. Because v'chitim, if you would have just had that diuk of Merkav and Moshav, so you could have tied it. I understand that the Torah, it's obviously a completely different level of Kedusha. And over there, we find that kind of distinction. But when it comes to Rabbanan, maybe there isn't such a need. And we wouldn't be makbid. No, comes along the pasuk to say, Vatifchar Lashon Arumim. Who are the Arumim? The Arumim are the Rabbanan. V'chi tema, and then why do we need the next pasuk v'omer? Because v'chi tema hanimila rabbanan avu b'mila d'amalo, that this is only when it comes to speaking in things that have to do with a halacha. But if you're just speaking regular things, so then there is no concept of being careful of your language. V'omer says, da'atz fatai borur milelu, even my own lips, the things that I'm talking about. Wait a second. Okay, I understand, but I mean, it isn't even true what you're saying. There's so many places in the Torah where it does talk about a woman riding. How come it does that? I mean, you're telling me that that is considered to be gross. So why is the Torah using gross language? I mean, b'yishaloktiba merkav, we just had. V'atokom rivka uvenarotea v'atirkavna ala gimalim. So in a sense, now we've got this gross picture of our mother Rivka with spread legs. Why did the Torah do that? No, you don't understand. Where there's no choice, because this is the only word that is usable to convey the specific circumstances, obviously the Torah doesn't avoid using whatever the language is. That's ridiculous. What am I supposed to say? I'm supposed to use a euphemism and to tell you that Rivka was sitting calmly on the camel and we see an entirely different scene in our eyes. Whereas in reality, as we pointed out when we were learning the Parsha, the idea of a camel is an absolute shocker, right? So it's like, oh my God, what the heck is this? So it'd be like getting on those animals in Star Wars, you know? I mean, that's not something that you just sit calmly on and smoke a cigarette. You hold on for dear life. So in order to give us that vision of Rivka getting on a camel, oh, help! And she's holding on for dear life. She's obviously not side-saddling it. So we could not have said the word yeshiva without destroying the entire meaning of your ability to conjure up the scene in your mind, okay? So ahata mishum bi'ituta de gmalim, she was terrified of sitting on a camel. I need to say that to you. You need to understand what's going on. So here's this three-year-old girl on top of this thing that's 10 times her size, you know? So, okay, so then that becomes the norm. Urchuhu. Well, what about Vayikach Moshe Tishto Vet Banav Vayarkivei Malach Hamor? I mean, there it says that. No. That's because Hatam Mishum Banav. It is my suggestion, gentlemen, that the next words are a mistake. It should not say Urchahu because it's irrelevant. Urchahu, the way Rashi understands it, and the Pashtus of the Gemara is that since it says his wife and children, so we always use language that's appropriate to males, even if there is a female that's there. So you don't need the word urchahu in this case. If you put in the words urchahu, then the meaning of the Gemara is that she was holding some of the kids and therefore would no way have been able to carry them on side saddle because she would have been scared of dropping them. Okay, what about the fact that it says with Avigail, it says that there was Avigail riding on a chamor, and she's chasing after David and so on. So why does it say riding? Why doesn't it say that she was Yoshevet? No, because there also, I need to know the scene. The scene is it's pitch black. She's scared. Who knows what's going to happen? She can't see where the animal is going. So the norm is that she would be holding on for dear life, urchahu. Or maybe she wasn't afraid of the nighttime, but she was afraid of David. I mean, this whole thing was a terrifying situation. She's coming to David. David wants to murder her husband and, take revenge for the way that he treated the men. And he was married by Malchus, so she had a very serious meeting coming up. Or maybe she wasn't terrified of David. Maybe she was just scared that she was going down the mountain. You don't go down a mountain on side saddles. So again, it's necessary for us to know that. Okay, fine. So look, forget about the writing business, okay? Didn't you say that the Torah avoids the word tamei? There's a million tameis in the Torah. I don't understand what you mean. B'raisam ilo k'tiv tamei? All right, I'm changing the approach over here. I am not handling this, says the Gemara. Ella, that's what the Ella means. I'm not handling this on the basis of a case-by-case analysis of why I would use this word as opposed to that word in this case. There is a general klal. The general klal is that our foremost concern is information density in the Torah. That's our foremost concern beyond the issues of Lashon Nekiyah. And therefore, wherever you do not have a problem of information density, and you could say the same thought with the same number of letters, then obviously we will choose the Lashon Arumim. But if you're going to be sacrificing information density, then we will not do that. So where you're talking about things that are of the same length, of course the Torah uses the Lashon Nekiyah. But where we lose information density, then we use the Lashon Kitzura, except for places where the Torah wants to teach you bedavka, by going out of its way to mess up the information density. So there it's coming to teach you, you must be careful about meaning. Fine. So because of that, I will give you examples where, see, 16 words, 16 letters. There is a general rule. When you are teaching, always teach in the most possible concise ability that you've got. So whatever the Derech Tzara is, information density is a klal in the way that you are teaching as well. So don't sit there and blab and blab and blab. Ask the Gemara, is that true? But wait a second, I've got places where the Torah will use even a coarse language when the option was not any less information dense. What about the word rochevet and the word yoshevet? Aren't they the same? And nonetheless, the Torah insisted on using, as we said before with Avigail, it said the word rochevet, and rochevet is coarse. Yes, but the Torah wrote rochevet without the vav, so now rochevet comes out to be shorter. So in order to teach you, I mean, obviously you could have done the same thing with yoshevet, right? You could have said yoshevet also with the vav, but that's the point, as Rashi brings out. I'm doing something that seems crazy to show you, look, if I save one letter, then it's kedai to be coarse, because it's more important to be information dense than to worry about the impact of the language. So now we've got some cute stories about this, which give us some fascinating insight into what it was like to sit in Daf Yomi once upon a time. So anyway, there were these two guys that were in shir with Rav, and it was really a tough sugya. And one of them says, oh God, this sugya is driving me crazy. I feel like a tired pig. So he didn't use the word pig. He used a nice word. He called the pig, as they do in Yiddish, a dover acher. So this makes me feel like a dover acher mesamkan. I can't take it anymore. Just get me out of the shir. The other guy says, yeah, man, it's hell. Shavtino hashmaitza kigdi mesamkan. So he used a nicer word. That this made me feel like a tired kid. Now, Rav refused to speak with, who knows? It's a machlokas. Which one Rav refused to speak with? You see, because, I mean, the Pashta says he didn't like the imagery of the piggy. But the question is, saying the Dover Acher, Misankan, I mean, wasn't that nice that he avoided using the word pig? But the problem is that it was too many letters since he had the option of using the Gedi. So this sort of leaves us up interesting. So I'm going out of my way to use a Lashon Nekiyah, But I'm using a Lashon Nekiya that conjures up a non-Nekiya image, which is a pig. And what's more, it's more than what would have been necessary to say, since I could have said Gedi. Now, obviously, there's the additional issue of the impact that I'm trying to make of what this Daf Yomi is doing to me. I mean, it's like, oh my God, it's like a tired pig. That's the truth. I mean, to say it's just like a tired Gedi, I mean, it doesn't give the flavor of what I'm feeling. So this is also, this would be, as we'll see in a moment, we've got some questions. And the next case of what would be better. There were two Talmidim that were in front of Hillel HaZakein. One of them was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Some say the story was there were two Talmidim sitting in front of Rebbe. One of them was Rabbi Yochanan, the Amora. And Chad Omar. So one of them said, how come when we harvest grapes, we use a Tohar Kelim? Mipnei ma botzrim b'tahara. But when we do the Masikas, Zaysim in Moskin Batara. We don't do it Batara. And the other one said, why is it that we're Botsrim Batara, but we're Moskin Batuma? And so whoever it was, Rebbe or Hillel, said, I'm sure about this guy. Now here there's really Machlokasin. Who is this guy? Is this guy the first guy? That's the Pashtas. And this is the one who will be Mora Hora'ah B'Yisrael, because he didn't want to use the word Moskim Betum'ah. And indeed, lo ayu yamim mu'atim, acho ra'o rabbi Yisrael. Indeed, that is exactly what happened, that he became a Gadol B'Torah. But it's not so poshut, is it? Because over here, he used too many words. Because he said, he could have said, Moskim Betum'ah. And if you say Moskim Betum'ah, so then you don't, you save all those extra words, Ve'ein Moskin B'Tahara, right? You don't have to say that. So why would I have said that it would have been better to say Ein Moskin? There's a whole bunch of discussion, right? So some actually learn that it was the other one that he was saying is the right one, because this one is more meduyak. He said, in this case, Tuma, because he saved words. There is another approach. And the other approach is the Mipnei ma moskin betumah is a ridiculous statement. Obviously, you don't have to be mosek betumah. So in order to avoid the imprecision of moskin betumah, so that gave him the excuse of saying it the way that he did. Okay, possibly. In any event, as you could see, it's really difficult to say about these things, the precisely how to balance your language. Now, there were three Kohanim that had been working on the Mizbeach, and it came time on Shabbos to get a piece of the Lechem HaPanim. So one of them says, my gosh, all I got was one pole, a bean of the Lechem HaPanim, because there were so many Kohanim. The other one said, gosh, I got a whole kezias. And one of them said, I got a piece the size of the tail of a lizard. What? You use a sheretz tumei to describe the size of the Lechem HaPanim? So they decided something's wrong with this guy. Botku acharav, so they decided to check his genes, and it turned out, Matsu bo shemetz psul, they found out that he was a halal, Rashi says, he wasn't roi for the Aveda, he shouldn't have been a Kohen, and that's why he was using this kind of language. Wait a minute, doesn't it say, beferish in the Mishnah, that ein botkim in amizbeach v'lamala? We had this in Asara Yuchsin, in Kedushin, that you do not check anytime a Kohen was found, a grandfather or great-grandfather, that Kohen was found to have been on the Mizbeach, that means that he's already gone through a complete genealogical bedika, right? So you don't check beyond that. So if this guy was working on the Mizbeach, why are we checking up on him? Oh, you're right. So it must be that we didn't find a genealogical problem. We find a midos problem. So lo tem a shemetz psul, ela imet shachatz psul, that this guy has a history of being a stuck-up, useless guy who didn't treat the kachim b'kovet. Because of that, he wasn't really roi to do the aveda. Like we find that any kohen who doesn't have the proper attitude towards the aveda is not allowed to be ove. Or you know what you could say? Look, I mean, it means exactly what he said. It turned out that he was a cholol. She said, but I thought you don't look. Obviously, we don't look under normal circumstances, but if the guy wants to put a sign on himself, I stink, so then we look and try to figure out, why do you stink? Now, there was this another Misa where we use language in ways that are information dense, and yet they don't seem to be saying anything. Okay, so we've spoken about the implications of language in terms of the imagery, but now there are the implications of language in terms of what catalyzes, what can this language catalyze? And this is an amazing story. So there was this guy, and he used to pretend to be Jewish and would go up to show that he is able to eat from the Korban Pesach, and nobody is going to stop him from getting the best. And he would join the Chabura and eat from the Korban Pesach. And then he would come back and he tells Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, you know, you guys, you think you have it all worked out? It says in the Torah, Kol ben Nechar lo yochalbo. Kol Arel lo yochalbo. Let me tell you something. I'm about as Arel as you can get. And it's about as ben Nechar as you can get. And I go up there, Va'anakach, and let me shufri. They give me the best of the Korban Pesach. Ha! Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra said, you idiot, they don't give you the best. They know exactly what you are. They give you all the garbage. Did they ever give you from the fat tail, the aliyah? Of course not, because that's only for Jews. Ask them to give you the fat tail and see what happens. Uh-huh. Think you're so smart. Now, obviously, the aliyah is supposed to be put on the Mizbeach, right? So anyway, the guy goes back the next Pesach, and he says to them, hey, listen here, man. I am a member in good standing of this Chabura. I demand my share this year of the Aliyah. So Omer like, Aliyah? What are you talking about? The Aliyah is put on the Mizbeach. Bull, the guy says. I know you just don't want to give me the Aliyah. Who told you to say that? I know from Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Okay? So stop playing games with me. So they say to each other, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra told them to ask for the Aliyah? Uh-oh, something is very strange. And so, sure enough, they checked him out, and boy, was he an oral like anybody. And they took him and murdered him. And they killed him. Vikatlu. And then they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Shalom lach, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. You may be all the way in Barnea's neighborhood in the Tzivim, but Mitzudatcha Prusab Yerushalayim, you've got your trap spread all the way out in Yerushalayim. And this was just the understanding of how you could catalyze the most complex kind of responses that you needed to do by just choosing the right words to say. Beautiful.
Rabbi, the minig is that I remind Rabbi of the Rosh Hashivas that tells of Rabbi's grandfather's pshat, that since they cooked the Korban Pesach all together and it was done while still mefarkes, so it's an Isser of Avram and a Chayv Hagai, and that's why it was Chayv Misa.
Ah, beautiful. I had forgotten that. I was so taken with the Yama Kineret that Gavi was showing us that I pusha couldn't breathe. Okay. So you want to explain again, Reb Barnea?
Reb Rudeman Zatzal explained on what the Mefarshim discuss on what basis do they kill the guy. So I learned this in Reb Sridov Schlanger Zatzal Shir, and he quoted the Rosh Hashiva that since they cook the whole Korban Pesach together as one, and since the Shrit is done while it's still mefarkes, it's still moving, and for a goy, Avram and Lachai means it has to stop moving. That means the whole Korban Pesach is a Isser of Avram and Lachai for a goy, and therefore it was Chayv Misa. Others learn elsewhere and other approaches of a gzeil or whatever it is. So we're sitting in, and Rabbi Yosef Tembel of Hashem, the Manal, comes to give us a bechina. And the biggest bum in the class is asked this question, and he says it's because of Avram and Achai. Rabbi Tender starts to laugh at him, at it, and Rav Shlomo says, it's the Rashivas Pshat. Oh, yes.
Okay. Fine. As you know, of course, there's no din of Avram and Achai on an Akum where it would be good enough for Yisrael, but we won't discuss that problem. Okay,